and welcome to the Partners in Fincrime podcast in association with FSCom. My name is Evan McGugan and I'm a senior manager in the Fincrime team here.
I'm Chris Vaughan and I'm a manager in the financial crime team.
In this podcast series, we'll be looking to discuss all things anti-financial crime.
We'll be deep diving into cutting-edge stories as well as other interesting topics in the financial crime space.
In this episode, we talk about MiCA, the Markets and Crypto Asset Regulation, which was recently approved by the European Parliament. Hey, Chris, how's it going?
Hi, Evan. Yeah, all good. Thanks. How's things?
Not too bad, thanks. Not too bad at all. You'll be glad to hear I've got a professional microphone for this recording. I know yours is still on the way, but how do I sound?
Sound great. Luxury, vocal.
Good stuff. So what's on the agenda this week? I think it's been a slightly quieter month or 2 months in the world of anti-financial crime compared to perhaps what we're used to. But there has been a relatively large development with respect to crypto assets, virtual assets, and providers of such products in the EU through MiCA, the Markets in Crypto Assets Regulation, which is essentially looking to cover crypto assets, trading venues, wallets where crypto assets are held, and obviously bring them into the regulatory framework, protect investors, provide financial stability, but also, obviously, importantly, from the perspective of the EU, allow for innovation and foster that well-regulated, supervised, and ultimately safe crypto asset sector. Chris, you're obviously FSCom's resident crypto guy, as I continue to refer to you as. I don't know if you'd like to maybe kick things off with respect to MiCA. What have you seen? What interests you? What are the highlights, the points that you think the listener would be well informed to be aware of?
Yeah, it's a big development for certain. And I think the headline, I suppose, is bringing regulatory certainty to a space and to an environment that has had very little. So I think that's the main benefit. And I think there are tons of benefits here. It's always a bit of a trade-off. Crypto originally was set up to be in the spirit of crypto assets were sort of set up to be a little bit, not to evade KYC entirely, but to be a sort of a method in which people could hold their own assets, be their own banker, and by that not really have to be put through traditional KYC methods or anything like this in order to access financial services. So obviously more regulation means a reduction in that, and it means that we're going to have to give up the use of crypto is going to have to give up this non-KYC approach eventually. But I think pretty much everyone agrees now that that is obviously the correct direction to go. And obviously that's been the case for some time now. Just to perhaps do baby steps into this sort of setup where this has come about. So obviously crypto assets, when they were first launched, completely unregulated, we've then see them come under the scope of money laundering regulations. So crypto asset firms, which we can potentially refer to as VASPs, so that's virtual asset service providers, now have to already adhere to money laundering regulations. So that happened in the UK and the EU a bit ago, and that has been the case for a few years now, a couple of years. VASPs are essentially any firm that provides crypto asset services of some kind. So it can be an ICO, an initial coin offering, for example, that would have to be, that would fall within the scope of a VASP, offering custodial services, arranging crypto asset transactions, all these kinds of things. Basically everything that would reasonably fall within the definition of a crypto asset service falls under the scope of a VASP, and you would therefore need to register with a local regulator for those to be covered under the money laundering regulations. And now the additional step that we're seeing with things like MiCA is a more broad regulation that we would see with things like FSMA in the UK, for example, and aligning a proper regulatory framework for the assets themselves. So what's in scope there? Pretty much all the crypto assets you can think of, although perhaps crucially not DeFi. Not saying not DeFi tokens, but DeFi is in decentralized finance services, for example, don't fall within that. But yes, fundamentally, I think this is bringing a regulatory clarity. Firms are going to understand what they need to do. And it's also going to bring passport in as well, which is obviously massively beneficial to anyone who wants to access the market and to serve EU customers. So passport in meaning that you can register in one country and then passport your services across the EU once you are registered to provide your services at the EU sort of supranational level. So yeah, it's a massive introduction, and it's super recent. So just to sort of cover when that's come in, 20th of April of this year, the European Parliament voted in favour of it, and I think all the signs point that this now has to go to the council, but once that goes over the line, essentially, it will come into force quite quickly after that, and then firms will probably have around 18 months to actually comply. So yeah, that perhaps gives a bit of background I've touched on there. I personally think this is massively positive, and of course, as a compliance person, you can imagine why, but it's all steps in the right direction. And I think it brings a clarity that we're just not seeing perhaps in the rest of the world, other than perhaps you might argue places like Dubai, where the regulator has taken a really open and transparent stance and been very clear about what the regulatory outlook will look like for crypto assets. Can't really say the same for many other states yet. The US still quite confusing, a lot of confusion over sort of securities. And the SEC being quite negative, I think, on a lot of crypto assets, still there. So it's a really good step for the EU, I think, and I think it will have a massive positive effect.
Yep, spot on. I think it's a real step forward from the EU to try and position themselves as a global sphere, a global hub, rather, for crypto regulation, registration, supervision. It's a real shot across the bow for the UK. I know certainly UK Gov has been talking about wanting to make the UK a global innovator, a hub for crypto going forwards. And we haven't necessarily seen that come to life through the FCA's approach to supervision and registration of VASP so far, although certainly appreciate that it's a moving sphere, changing sort of sands, and it hasn't maybe necessarily got to the point that it wants to, but UK Gov certainly talked about Brexit potentially bringing the dividends of making the UK the world's crypto driver almost, and it's quite interesting to see that the EU really is driving this forward at the minute. I guess maybe interesting to point out too, actually, now I'm thinking about it, that MiCA is a regulation and not a directive too, which really I think illustrates how top of the EU's agenda this is. We've sort of seen spotty transposition of recent AML directives and so on over the past wee bit. This is a regulation, as you said, Chris. It's due to come in probably if the European Council approves it and it get published in the EU in about 18 months. So we'd be looking towards the back end of 2024 or 2025. But unlike directives, this is a direct regulation that applies to the EU 27. In totality, and there'll be no room for regulatory arbitrage or anything such as that, which I think is a really positive thing. And to your point, it's really going to provide clarity, not just for investors, but also for firms, would-be firms, as well as existing firms. Being able to passport, certainly, across the EU 27, having that home sort of member state registration, and then being able to use your financial services passport, for want of a better term, to service EU 27 customers on the basis of equivalent controls, no matter where you're set up and authorised, will be great, not just for respective firms to have that clarity and understanding as to what's on the table, but also consumers in X country being able to avail of the services of Y country authorised firm is really positive. I saw mention too of national authorities, according to Micah, being required to issue authorizations within a time frame of 3 months, which I thought was quite interesting. I know certainly from experience, Chris, and I know you've been involved in some VASP applications yourself, but many prospective firms have found the application process to be relatively difficult to get through. I think that's not necessarily specific to VASPs, or confusingly, CASPs. Have you seen this? Micah refers to them as crypto asset service providers, so there's another acronym that we need to keep on top of. But I know it's certainly over the past 5-6 years not specific to crypto, that the expectations of regulators have become more prescriptive and heightened. But the requirement for authorities to issue authorizations within a time frame of 3 months is an interesting move. I don't know what that'll look like in practice. We'll probably not see what it looks like in practice for another 18 to 24 months when this all comes in. But from having worked on VASP applications, it has been difficult for firms to get through. It has been difficult for firms to engage with a regulator. So hopefully that's an indication that, you know, the EU is going to be treating this particularly seriously, and hopefully national competent authorities will be well staffed to be able to do that. It's going to require a lot of upskilling and staffing, no doubt. So yeah, I think only a good thing for firms to have that clarity. Only a good thing for investors, consumers as well. You know, having your funds with firms who have to maintain certain safeguarding-esque requirements can only be a good thing. The EBA supposedly is going to be maintaining a register of non-compliant CASPs. So that can only be a good thing for consumers as well. So I think I was going to say evolution, not revolution. I know it is sort of revolution because it's brand new, but also it's sort of what the regulated sector has been familiar with for a while, and looking forward to ultimately coming in.
Yeah, and I think it sounds like, based on sort of early responses to Mika, is that this might well become the template, the global template for how to regulate crypto asset services. So it's all positive. I was actually on Twitter the other day for my sins, and I saw something really, really interesting actually, which is, and I'll cite my sources here. The source of the data is from PitchBook, which is sort of data all around investments and things like that. And already there looks to be a positive change in the wake of Mika. Let's say, obviously not since it's been approved, but in the build up to Mika coming into force, the share of VC investment into crypto projects in Europe has already increased by 10 times in 1 year, from 5.9% in Q1 of 2022 to 47.6% in Q2 of 2023. So I'm not going to say that all of that is due to Mika, of course, but nonetheless, that gives you a massive indication of the potential there when you have regulatory clarity, when you make it clear what the goalposts are, let's say, and how these firms, which are, you know, innovation is unstoppable, it's going to happen. We just need to understand how to regulate it properly. And I think that just shows you what a positive step it's been to introduce something like this, something as big as and all-encompassing as Mika has really only reassured firms and has brought those industries into Europe, and that'll be, well, who knows, we'll be playing catch up now, certainly from the rest of the world with Mika, and perhaps that will be the template for regulation going forward. So yeah, great stuff, I suppose. All told, it really is very much a positive development. Yeah,
I think that's really, really, really interesting point on the increase in investment, and not something I was aware of. I think it's always been the case, certainly over the past decade, the expectation that institutional money is going to come into crypto. And obviously, if you spend a lot of time on the cryptocurrency subreddit, they would be wanting that to happen to increase prices. And obviously that, you know, very well might happen. But equally, if we want the benefits of distributed ledger technology and blockchain to really be realized in the fullest way possible, then, you know, you probably do want that institutional money coming in. You want the firms to be able to have the capacity to build on the technology to to sort of create new tools, disrupt, innovate, and that institutional money, you would think, is only going to come in even more when those investors themselves in these firms and this technology have that clarity to know that they're not going to get exit scams.
Yeah, absolutely. I was just going to say myself, I think in a similar, it's sort of a trend in Europe at the moment towards this broad, let's say, regulatory position. Like we've seen AMLA and now MiCA's coming in. Obviously, this is not a surprise. Both of those things have been in the pipeline for some time. But just as you would expect and hope for strong governance from the top within a firm that you may work in, and mechanisms for how the senior management directs the company's strategy when it comes to financial crime. We're seeing the EU do that from the supranational level, and it's not quite the same analogy there. I'm stretching a little bit for that one, but it is just great to see that this formalized structure is coming into place, which will only provide clarity and assurance, and will hopefully achieve the best outcomes for consumers as well. So I don't know, nothing bad to say, let's say.
Nice one. That's MiCA then. I think it's important to sort of note too that MiCA sort of, it covers what it does, but it complements existing regulation directives and also upcoming, incoming rules that are due to sort of land, particularly from the EU perspective, but also in the UK and elsewhere. So it touches on, it adds to the EU's block-wide firepower when it comes to AML. It complements the directives and some of the obligations that are part of that. But also it sort of complements DORA as well, which is due to come in relatively shortly, and also the EU travel rule. Now I sort of bring up the travel rule because we were talking about crypto and we're talking about incoming legislation and regulation and so on, and perhaps down the pike, Chris, we may want to do a fuller podcast on the travel rule, because I think it's definitely a topic unto itself and probably one that we could really get in the weeds with when it comes to technical aspects and implementation and challenges and potential approaches with third-party service providers and so on. But as we're on this topic of incoming obligations and so on, would you like to sort of touch on the travel rule and give a very brief overview as to what firms should be expecting when that lands on our door?
Yeah, absolutely. Let me sort of set the scene, I suppose, with where the travel rule comes from. So originally it's essentially the same concept as wire transfer regulations, which come originally from a FATF recommendation, which I think it's recommendation 14, if I'm not mistaken.
Very good, if that's
I hope that's right. I'm literally doing that off the top of my head. But I think it's rule 14. Having talked about this quite a lot, I'd be disappointed if I've got that wrong. But yeah, so that's where it comes from. And essentially the idea behind the rule is that information on the person who is sending funds will have to be sent along with the transaction and the beneficiary name as well. So it's all to do with the payer and the payee, essentially, and information on both of those individuals or entities or account holders, let's say, will need to travel along with the transaction. And the idea is obviously just to enhance transparency for transactions and be a mechanism by which firms can use for screening, for understanding who their customers are doing business with, et cetera, it all enhances the transparency around transactions. And this, the same thing is sort of also going to be applied to crypto assets. So information about the person who is sending a crypto asset transaction will have to be sent. And it's different information, but nonetheless, it's a massive, massive change. This is one of the most controversial sort of additional regulatory pieces that I've seen when it comes to crypto assets, because it's simply not really within the technology of crypto assets to allow this kind of information sharing. Yep. And because of that, firms are having to come up with different ways to get around that technology. So there's all sorts of different types of protocols, usually they're referring to these things as, that are basically methods for getting around the travel rule and for complying with the travel rule. But it's not quite clear if they all are going to interlock with each other, if they're all going to be able to talk the same language. So yeah, as you say, perhaps later down the line, where we get closer to sort of actual travel rule implementation, maybe we can do a full podcast on this. But that just gives you a little bit of context about what it is, how it fits in, and gives you a bit of an analogy, I suppose, to the fiat space as well.
Nice one. That was great. It's actually Regulation 16, or Recommendation 16. Sorry. We were so close.
I thought it was
14. So close. But yeah, no, that's fantastic. I completely agree. It's probably something we should have a full podcast on. I think the point, particularly on different protocols and the fact that X firm and Y firm may be using different solutions, is just so alien when you compare it to what needs to be done in the fiat WTRs, and quite a scary point that you made, that really compliance with the incoming rule actually has to fight against the technology itself and build on top of that, which is not something I'd considered. And yeah, wow. So plenty for firms to be thinking about, plenty for firms to be at. But I think when you bring these two things together, Mika and the travel rule, as well as some of the other sort of tertiary regulations and so on that are sort of floating around, compare it to where we were 3, 4, 5 years ago, where you'd be buying your Bitcoin or your Monero or whatever the case may be on completely unsupervised, unregistered exchanges, to 3, 4 years in the future, where in the EU, everybody will be authorized by national competent authorities, passporting across the EU, common rule book for their own controls, and then having a WTR style equivalent framework to manage the flows. I think it's a very, very exciting time. Good time to be in compliance in crypto. A few sleepless nights, no doubt, for implementation. But yeah, I think the future is bright, and it's good to see the EU really leading this, and as you say, setting out the standard to how crypto could and potentially should be regulated.
Yeah, indeed, and I'm extremely disappointed that I got the recommendation wrong. just for listeners to know, Evan didn't know that. He's just Googled that in the meantime while we were talking.
No comment.
Right. Look, I think that's you know, I think we should do a travel rule focused episode, because I think that would be super useful, and we can dive down into it in a bit more detail around some of the difficulties as well, I think, and perhaps even some of the solutions, because there are so many different ones that it'd be good to perhaps highlight that in a bit more detail. So yeah, other than that though, I think you know, it's like you say, it's just fundamentally very positive for firms in the crypto space right now, I think, from a regulatory perspective. And I think it's essentially watched this space for other countries now. I think we'll have to expect that the UK will step up and follow this. And I'm sure the US is going to have to do the same, really, if they want to be competitive, if they want to be a hub for crypto. So, you know, it's all interesting times ahead, I think. Any final bits that you want to share, Evan, or should we call it a day on this one?
No, I think happy for us to call it a day, really. I think we covered all the main points, which sort of second your statement there. Watch this space, and we'll see what comes out of it. But yeah,
lovely stuff. All right, well, it's been a pleasure as always, and thanks everyone for listening, and we'll catch you next time. Cheers, all.
Cheers, Chris.